Is that good? I can see more leg than normal. Is that okay?
I'll zoom in on me a little bit. It depends on how much my knee will annoy me in the episode.
You don't like your knee.
If I can zoom just a little bit to have my knee not showing.
You do have a little bit about that, your hidden parts that you don't want them seen.
I have a very set comfort zone that I'm okay with people seeing.
Yeah, it's really just elbows down, neck up. Outside of that, you prefer no one look.
Exactly, yeah. Elbows down, neck up. Yeah.
This podcast was brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are talking about our most recent tournament, Play to Win CEDH tournament at Cloud City Games 8.
Number 8.
Yes.
He's done a lot of these now. Holy cow.
Yeah, which is crazy. This one was 96 person. We have done, I think this is the sixth that was 96 person. We have a 32 person and then maybe one or two 64 persons.
So this was either the fifth or the sixth 96 person event that we did.
We got them running pretty smooth. Last time it went a little bit late, but this time we were done by 9:30.
Well, guys, we made a couple of good changes to our timing, which I would like to talk about before we get into this.
And when you say we mean, of course, Cloud City decided to do this.
Oh, yeah. I was going to try to take advantage of lumping all of us in on this to make you
and
I look
good.
This
is all of our good decision, right?
But we had to sign off on it.
Yes.
And so our buddy Aaron at Cloud City, he's our main judge for these events, and it was his idea to cap the time in the rounds after time is called to an additional 10 minutes before it's just cut off and the match is called for a draw for the whole table. So normally what happens at a traditional CEDH tournament is once time in the round is called, the last turn, the turn that you are currently on, is the final turn of the game and you are allowed to have that turn play out. But what we realized last time, and as CEDH is continuing to show us that communication is an ever important part of the format, these extra turns can still be 40 minutes just themselves. And a lot of times that's just because people are trying to make sure that they can push wins in that time. So if they're playing like Quark Sakashima or just literally any deck that requires multiple spells to be cast and, you know, with Rhystic Studies in play, you know, there's a lot of reasons why these turns can go on for so long.
Definitely. And the 10 minute cap was, I thought, a huge boost to the day, because having those after time is called and then you have a surprise 45 minutes extra to wait, I feel like it's almost like when athletes get pulled from the game when they're hot. Like, now I'm thinking about other shit for too long. Like, I need to like stay in the tournament. I want to stay with it.
Yeah.
So I thought it was really helpful to like keep the day moving. And it also like gave a sense of like urgency and pressure when we knew time was called. All right. If you want to win, like, we have to keep things going and make things quickly. And although I do think there were one or two people that got caught in that crossfire of thinking that they would be able to win if they only had five more minutes and were still given a draw, I like that that's part of the game. That's part of the competition, is that you have to do it in times.
Because we can't really like do a chess clock all the time.
Right.
That would be like almost impossible to implement, even though it's probably ideal, unless we have some sort of electronic system hooked up to, you know, each one of the tables that's going on. There's no good way to implement that.
There's just too many times where priority is really going around like a bunch of times, but we shortcut through all of it because it would be too absurd to say pass, pass, pass 1900 times a turn.
Otherwise, on every player's upkeep and draw and main phase, when you typically don't always want to do something, like, you have to chess clock through it.
Every time you gain priority, that means every time you go through phases, you get priority for a second.
So at least this way, everyone was still incentivized to start playing more quickly, which I think is also a really good tournament skill to have. Like, I do, first of all, Magic is so boring to watch because people sit there and they spend 5 minutes thinking of their play. And there's nothing wrong with that because that's how Magic's been for 30 years.
Right.
You have availability to do that. But I like thinking about how that would like go in like football. Could you imagine like getting the ball as the quarterback and just standing there for like 5 minutes and going, no one's going to tackle me because I'm thinking of something, right?
Yeah.
It's a little ludicrous. So I like the idea that like we do need to make sure that like we're keeping up with the pace. And like, I don't know, there's something about skill and pace that also goes hand in hand.
And it's a little bit hard sometimes because as of right now, for us, draws are still worth 1 point. In our system that we had this weekend, wins are worth 5 points, draws are worth 1 point, losses are worth 0. And as long as draws are worth 1 point, there can be a reason reason to push for that draw sometimes.
Right.
So I have been thinking more and talking with Aaron a little bit more about some of these other systems that I've been seeing where you get a percent of a grand total of points that you start with. So you start with like 1,000 points and you wager 7% on each of your wins. And in some of these situations, you wouldn't get draws, which also I think would help get to your point, like make people just continue like playing the game and trying to win. And long term, I think that'll be a good thing. But we're not talking about tournaments. I think I'm getting ahead of myself here. Let's just talk about this tournament in particular.
This tournament in particular. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so that was the main thing that we did to kind of change up how the structure of this tournament would be. Otherwise, like, yeah, like you said, we still have the same point structure. We're still cutting to top 16 at the end of the 5 Swiss rounds, but we just thought this would be a great way to also like make sure that there wasn't going to be massive, excessive politicking.
Yeah, we want our finals games to end in under an hour, and they did, which is great.
They did. It was awesome. It was awesome. So we'll get into all of this as we start to go through our rounds. So what did you bring to this tournament, Dylan?
Yes, I brought Sisay. Sisay is actually, fun fact, the only deck that I've ever top 16 to seed each tournament with. So I was like, I don't care that Dockside's gone. I'm going to try it again. And over the last month, I've been trying to like relearn the Sisay lines. And I think I learned maybe like 60 of the 25,000 ways you can win with Sisay. So that was close enough for me to like feel okay with the deck. It's super fun, even without Dockside. I still love what it does. I love what it does to the table. I love what it does in the actual tournament situation. There's a lot of like politicking that can be done. So yeah, I brought Sisay and you brought?
I brought Atali.
Atali.
Because this way, if I did bad, it's not going to be my fault.
It's Atali's fault.
I can just chuck it up to luck.
Yeah. Okay. Should we go over our rounds for the day?
Let's do it. Yeah. Do you want to get started?
I would love to get started. I was in last place. Game one was against Kinnan, Grixis Marchesa, which is the Marchesa that says whenever you commit a crime, you can pay one generic mana and you look at the top two, one in your hand, one in the graveyard.
Very cool. Yeah.
This was Kawaja, one of our patrons, a longtime patron. So it was great to play against Kawaja game one. So it was Kinnan, Marchesa, Kinnan again, double Kinnan pod, and then me in last. So I know right away we were just talking about like play for the win. I already know a draw is the best thing that I can do. Fourth seed is already like a 13% win, and I'm playing against two other very grindy, very good late mid-range games. So
two of them are Kinnan.
And two of them are Kinnan, right? So like I know right away, like my best bet here is a draw. I don't know that winning is actually gonna be an option. These are the notes that I wrote down, and I'm gonna try to translate them as I go. Many One Rings and Clever Impersonators. The Clever Impersonators were coppering the One Rings.
Gross.
And Hullbreakers. I use my ring to have Bowmasters players kill each other's Bowmasters. I've talked to Kawaja on the Marchesa. I say, if I activate my One Ring and your Bowmasters, will you send it over at Kinnan's way? Kawaja says yes. I then also ask the Kinnan player, if I activate this One Ring and trigger your Bowmaster because you have a copied Bowmaster that was, I think, originally my Bowmaster, will you go over there and kill something over there? They say yes. I eventually get to, they kill both of their Bowmasters, which is great for me, the Sisay player.
Wow.
But ends up ultimately not mattering because we basically run out of time in the middle of a huge stack. Time is called. We try to resolve it. There's a huge war. I try to overload a Cyclonic Rift, trying to bounce the opposition agent that is in play. I use Legolas's quick reflexes to try to untap my Savala and try to kill opposition agent again. The only thing I wrote down is Flusterstorm is shown at the end with 7 minutes over round time. So we had 3 minutes left. And we basically figured out that we would be at this for another half hour if you wanted to keep on going, and there would be no real way to win. There might have been a strat that Kinnan was trying to resolve a copied Hullbreaker Horror and might have finished that stack with two Hullbreaker Horrors in play, and they probably could have got something if they had a bunch more time, but we all just decided there's not enough time and we called it a draw at the end of it. So I start the day off on a draw.
That's not that bad though. I mean, especially considering that you were in fourth in a pod that seemed like really difficult to get a win in.
Yeah,
I think that's a fine way to start the day.
Yeah, so I'll take it. And it's kind of funny because we talked about how like I kind of wish that draws weren't worth anything, but in this situation, since they are worth something, that's great for me. This
as is long the best as they're worth something, it's totally fine to have them.
Yeah, and had we not run out of time, I probably would have played things a little bit differently. I might have been able to let more of the stack resolve and have the other players try to do things. I was trying to, like, knowing that time was there, I was trying to see if I could push over top, so I was making game actions a little bit earlier than I normally would. So if the clock was different, who knows, would have been different, but it wasn't. How was your game one?
All right, so it's round one. I'm also going last to get things started.
I didn't even say my opening hand.
Oh, I didn't write down my opening hands.
Oh, okay. Then never mind.
If you have them,
let
you
me
can.
Say my opening.
Yeah,
hand.
Yeah.
I kept six. I kept Noble Hierarch, Marvin, The One Ring, Ancient Tomb, City of Brass, and Mana Vault. So basically, just all mana in The One Ring. And I said, I hope that's enough. That's what I kept.
There you go. Nice. So round one for me, I was up against Winota, T'Val, the new
like the zombie, the dragon that makes zombies.
Yeah, the dragon that makes zombies, the Field of the Dead commander.
I don't think so.
That's confusing. That makes it sounds like he wants to play Field of the Dead, but it's not. Oh wait, no. That's the
Necrobloom is the Field of the Dead commander. Although this one does something similar,
you're right,
you do put
a
land in.
Twos.
It is kind of like Field of the Dead.
It's the new Sidisi, is yeah. what it is. Yeah, kinda
closer to Sidisi, sure.
Way closer to Sidisi than Field of the Dead.
Yes,
now that I
would
say
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I would agree.
Oh my God, you're an idiot, Cameron. All
right, this deck wins with like Phyrexian Altar and a Gravecrawler or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can ask the player how it wins.
Atali has to stick around long enough to find out.
Yeah, exactly. So it was Winota, T'Val, Rogthras, and then me. So this pod actually went pretty well for me already. I got a turn two Atali, but got a little places from it. Like, I ended up being able to copy Atali once, but I couldn't find a tutor. I ended up passing after I landed the Winota player's Blood Moon, which felt really good.
Oh,
I had,
yeah.
like, three mana and Blood Moon in play, and I was thinking that I wanted to use my three mana to wheel so that I could keep going and try to see if maybe there was another way I could copy Atali or find a tutor.
Makes sense.
But my problem with wanting to wheel there was I'm opening up the other two blue players in the pod to find more interaction that's going to stop whatever I'm going to wheel into. And there's really no guarantee that what I'm going to wheel into is actually going to get me ahead. So I pass with this Blood Moon thinking that, okay, well, Winota can't get Winota out. T'Val's just done. And now I only have to worry about Rogthras, who can still use red mana pretty well and has like access to Springleaf Drum right now and Rograk and a couple of other ways to make color mana. They end up slamming Seedborn Muse on their next turn, which is not something that I'm able to come back for. I'm able to get another Atali on my next turn, but it gets hit with a Pact of Negation from the Rogthras player, who had that in their hand when I had the wheel, who would have used that on the wheel in order to save their Seedborn Muse no matter what, is what he would have told me. So really, no matter what, I don't think there was anything I could have done to kind of come out of that game without having some sort of other, like maybe just don't go for something without protection. So I don't really feel bad for not wheeling. But yeah, that's basically what happened. So after a couple turns, Rogthras just drew the rest of their deck until they could find an answer to the Blood Moon so that their Gaia's Cradle's turned on. They can make infinite mana and win the game from there. So
that Rogthras deck, that's really something. That deck hums.
It really does. Yeah, I'm very scared of it. So I'm starting off the day on a loss.
That's chunky.
That's a chunky. This is why I wanted to play the deck. Now it's not my fault,
not
right?
Your fault. It's
not my fault. I didn't spin into a tutor. Yeah.
Game two for me, I played against Glarb, Rogthras. My round is going to go similar to the one that you just told me. Iron Man, which is kind of cool.
Ooh.
And then me in last again. So I already know this one's tough again because I'm going last and Rogthras is going before me and they're just going to make so much mana. So I already go in thinking that this one's going to be tough for me to win. I end up mulliganing to five and I keep Polluted Delta, Gaia's Cradle, Mox Diamond, Arcane Signet, Oath of Nyssa, and I bought a Mana Vault and something else that I couldn't remember. I had never found a land off of the Oath of Nyssa. I've played the Mox Diamond, discarding the Polluted Delta so that I could keep Gaia's Cradle, because Gaia's Cradle is pretty good in this deck. My Oath of Nyssa, I never found a land, and off of my draw for turn, off turn one and two, I never found a land out of five cards, so I thought that I would. Maybe I should have went to four. Maybe I should have kept the Mana Vault instead of the Gaia's Cradle or something. I don't know. I feel like I could have made a better decision, but I remember thinking in the game, like, I didn't have an attitude like I felt like the game was winnable. You know what I mean? So, like, I think I maybe just, like, made decisions that, like, well, if I do get lucky off of this Oath of Nyssa and I get to keep a bunch of mana and Gaia's Cradle, like, that's how I can pull ahead with something like that, and I just didn't get it. But not only did that happen, I died to an insane Rogthras start. Turn two, Cradle into Seedborn Muse. Turn three, Cyclonic Rift. I had just Cradle in play. All my Mox Diamond and my Oath of Nyssa is bounced back in hand, but I have no way to redeploy any mana. So I died in the game with a Gaia's Cradle and no other permanents in play. And then he just had, like, eventually, after making a billion mana, did the Aboro Breeze Crawler line,
oh,
and won that way. right.
I mean, I kind of don't blame you for keeping that hand, because if you don't feel like you're in a winnable spot, you have to keep the highest upside play.
Got to be lucky, right? Like, I got to just hope that, like, I hit the land drop off of the Oath of Nyssa and then can somehow get things going, like, in a little later on. I don't know. Maybe I'm thinking back, maybe the Mana Vault just would have been better than the Gaia's Cradle.
Or maybe even, was there, like, another land that you could have had in play instead of the Cradle, like, from your Mulligan?
I could have kept the Polluted Delta and not used Mox Diamond, but then I wanted to be like, sure, like, I'm already mulliganing this low. I would need the Mox Diamond because I'm a five-color deck. I can't, like, what this if is, I go get Tropical Island and I fucking draw Ragavan? I'm like, fuck! You know what I mean? Like,
that makes
I need
sense.
To be able to recover afterwards. So, I don't know. There probably is a better thing that I could have done, but I didn't find it, and I lost that game to the Rogthrest player that ended up making top four. So I ended up feeling pretty good about
that. There you go, yeah. No, Pokemon VGC did teach me that, like, if you are in an unwinnable situation, sometimes your out is, like, getting your opponent to make a specific play and then taking advantage of that by doing your high-risk play instead. And I think that's it's just something that you have to do in order to turn those tides, because if your odds of winning are either 0 or 0.5, you got to go for the 0.5 option.
Yeah, and then, yeah, just hoping that, you know, something good would happen and it didn't, but that's okay. How was your round two? I'm starting off the day 0-1-1.
So I'm going first for this next one, and I'm already way luckier than in the previous pod. Also because my pod has an Atraxa player going second.
That's good for you.
So I feel a little better about it because now my odds are just slightly better that my Itali flips are going to be good.
They play clones, they play food chain, they play stuff that you like.
Exactly, yeah. Then Marnius is next. I'm like, okay, this pod might get a little hazy.
Dicey. Yeah.
Yeah, and then Thrasios Timna is going fourth.
Oh.
And now I'm even a little bit more scared because now this is the big interaction grind pod. And
yeah.
All they have to do is just wait me out.
All these players are playing Silence, Mindbreak Trap, all of kind of your worst nightmare
cards,
right?
Every card that I hate to see is a chunky player.
Yeah,
they're
all playing them, yeah.
So I kept a hand that had a turn two Jeskka's Will while everyone mulliganed. And most cards in hand were six.
Yeah.
So luckily...
That's the secret strategy against the turbo decks. Mulligan low. So they're just because we'll suck.
Exactly, yeah. So the Marnius player plays out a land to leave them with six cards in hand going into my turn two.
Okay.
So I Jeskka's Will them, and they're staring at their hand, and they're thinking really hard. So that tells me they have a way to get them five mana.
Yeah.
And I have Simeon Spirit Guide in my hand, and I know that I need them to not do anything so that I can still chunky and basically not have... my Jeskka's Will get countered. I mean, I have Wheel of Fortune in my hand, so I could still wheel with two red mana up after this.
Okay, yeah.
That's my backup plan. My opponent's thinking, and I just say, six is a really awkward number. And they go, okay, I'll let it resolve.
Nice, that's good.
That's clever.
Yeah.
So it resolves. I pitch the Simeon Spirit Guide, and I resolve Chunky and flip into Atraxa's Displacer Kitten.
Oh God!
Immediately.
I feel like that move is like the Who Said That? Like Who Said That? You say something like that. Six mana is an awkward number. Who said that?
Yeah.
Just like sneak it into existence, put it in their head. Like you're not saying really anything. You're just that's true. Six is an awkward number. Like there's no lie. You're
exactly.
Like,
yeah. It's just I just happen to have seven actually.
Yeah. I'm gonna call that. Who said that?
Who said that? Yeah. So I flip over into a Displacer Kitten from Atraxa and Thrasios Timna's Crop Rotation.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well, this works really nicely with the Worldly Tutor that I have in my hand.
Uh-oh.
So there's also a Praetor's Grasp that I flip into that is targeting the Atraxa player for their food chain is what I want to find.
That makes sense.
But Marnius now commandeers the Praetor's Grasp, which I guess commandeering the Jeskka's Will was what they were thinking of. So they commandeer the Praetor's Grasp. So I let the Crop Rot go. I let the Displacer Kitten go. And then with the Praetor's Grasp commandeered, still on the stack, now targeting someone else, I cast my Worldly Tutor with the new Cradle that I just got from the Crop Rotation, triggering Displacer Kitten to blink Itali. And now Itali forces his trigger so that I'm forced to cast the next four spells that I get. And I proceeded to not miss non-creatures for every next Itali trigger that I kept getting.
Yeah, because Displacer Kitten, no matter what, as long as you hit a non-creature, you flicker Itali and half those things probably aren't even going to resolve, but you get just more Itali triggers,
right? Well, that was the thing. I didn't resolve a spell for the rest of the game because they all go on the stack at the same time. Then Displacer Kitten sees that I cast a non-creature. So then the Displacer Kitten goes on the stack, blinks Itali, a new Itali trigger goes on the stack and gives me four more spells to put onto the stack, but not to resolve.
Right.
So I proceeded to do this until I had Diabolic Intent, Flare of Duplication, Valley Floodcaller, High Fae Trickster, and Ranger Captain Veos on the stack, in addition to the 30 other spells that were locked on the stack right there too.
And you can just decide to like stop triggering them, right? And like start letting them resolve at a certain point.
Oh yeah, I can choose like my mana rock with Displacer Kitten to start blinking
to
that
stop it
instead.
And then just like let some of the things resolve.
Yeah, and it's very awkward because it doesn't matter if I hit one or two non-creatures, I only get one more Atali trigger because he'll leave the battlefield and have the other Displacer Kitten trigger not happen.
But
right?
It's not like those Balakin Tents are like lost forever. Whenever you want, you can choose to just flicker something else and then start letting the stack resolve. Let the Ranger Captain resolve, pop it. Let the Diabolical Tomb,
exactly.
Right? You can go like that.
But there's no reason to. I would have seen Mindbreak Trap already.
Right, yeah.
So it was absolutely insane. It was probably one of the luckiest Atali flips I've ever gotten right at the right time. I needed that crop rotation to get me some extra mana to use the non-creature spell that I had in my hand to really get me going. And it was an insane turn two win, preventing every other player from seeing their turn two.
They just conceded. They say, we're dead.
Yeah,
win
was on the stack. Like, if you want, I'll go through and resolve 30 spells.
It'll take you less than an hour, but it'll probably take you...
right?
You'll finish in time. It'll just take, like, the whole time.
It'll be easier for you to scoop than for me to then, like, find a one drop with my Ranger Captain of Aeos.
That makes sense. Cool.
Yeah, so it was an insane win. I'm now 1-1 going into round three.
Looking good. Round three for me, I kept Birds, Delighted Halfling, Chrome Mox. I wrote Simic Bounce, but what I mean is the Colossal Sky Turtle, Ancient Tomb, and then another land or something. So basically just like a bunch of mana.
And who were you playing against?
I was playing against round three. Oh, did I not? Hold on, let me think a second. This was the pod that I won too, and I didn't write down the opponents. All right, so I'll just read what I wrote down, and then we'll try to figure it out based off of that.
Great.
I was kept off an activation for most of the game. Oh, I was playing against Will. Will was on TNT, because Will used a Force of Vigor to not only get rid of Aristic Study, but also get rid of my Chrome Mox.
Was this Nate's pod?
Nate's pod.
So Nate's in the pod.
Nate's
so
in the pod,
you're playing
too.
Against Blue Farm, Timna Thrasios, and then you're against the Tevall player.
I'm against the Tevall player, the same one that you play against, the same one that we play against at local sometimes.
I remember this because my game ended, and then I went over to watch your game to see how things were going, because Nate was in your pod. I was like, okay.
Yeah, so my Chromox has been Force of Vigored. I was loudly fearful of Nate's voice,
Voice of Victory.
Voice of Victory, who he was on Tim McCrom. He had like 9 cards in his hand. He was about to untap with the voice. So I was like, can anyone do anything before Nate's untapped? Like, we're going to die to this. Knowing also I have Kutzel in play with us to say. And then Will decides to, and I think rightfully so, kills the voice before the TNT player untaps. But that leaves him without a removal for my Kutzel for me to untap, because Nate's just going first. And maybe there could have been a world where Nate could have politicked his way out of that, but he's not really a talker much. So I was just like, someone should do something about this voice. And Will was like, yep, I agree, we should. So then it went to me. I kept Kutzel in play for a few turns, and then I basically ended with an end step Silvala and won with Marnius the Toy and Ioreth.
Marvin the Toy.
Marvin the Toy. What? Marnius, not the Esper Commander. No, sorry. Marvin the Toy.
Well, would you play Marnius in Silvala? No, you wouldn't. But would you play Marnius in Sisay?
I don't, and I wouldn't.
Oh.
But the toy, I would. So yeah, I ended up winning with after Nate's voice got destroyed. Nate didn't kind of do anything. And then in Nate's end step, I tutored for Silvala, untapped. And with Kutzel in play, I went for a Silvala Tyvar. Tyvar ended up being like incredible for me throughout the day. For some reason, I was just like kind of one of the go-tos. Like being able to find Silvala into untap, find Tyvar into continue the line is just almost surprisingly easy, like easier almost than the Derevi line, although I like the Derevi line the most because you can do the Derevi line at instant speed, and the Tyvar line obviously using a Planeswalker, so it's sorcery speed, but it's also just very easy. So that was great, and I won a game. So I'm 1-1-1 now with Sisay.
I walked away from the table when Nate's Voice of Victory got hit because I knew you were winning that game at that point, because I just from looking at the rest of the board and seeing that no one really had any advantage in play, and you had Kutzel, you had Eorith in play already, and I was just like, this is Dylan's game to win.
Yeah, and the Eorith in play is nice too, because that's another like dumb Sisay card. That card sucks, don't kill that card.
Right?
Like, you can't really afford to actually get rid of that permanent, but eventually in like 100 turns it will be a win condition, but there's almost always just something better in play than Eorith, and a lot of like the like shitty Sisay cards, there's always something better in play. Honestly, those type of pods feel much more winnable to me than some of the other weird pods. Like when I'm in a pod of just like all like 4-color pile value decks, I feel like those pods I have a strange advantage for some reason, because everyone's interaction is counter spells, and they can't waste their precious removal because they have 2 removal pieces. And so I feel like much better in those pods than other ones. And I think my mindset going into this game was like, I think this is a pod that I can win. I think this is a game that I can win. So Hell yeah.
So far, that mindset has been like the best gut feeling you've had in this tournament. You've known exactly what has been good scenarios for you and when it's worked out, and you've played it to your outs.
I guess, maybe. Thank you. That's nice for you to say.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
How did your third round go?
So it was going last again. So it's Urza and then Ezio and then Quark Sakashima and then me. So I had a bit of a slower hand this time because I did not have a turn two Atali. Instead, I went turn one, land Sol Ring into Talisman.
Okay.
So that next turn, I could play land into Roaming Throne. That made me feel pretty good about, you know, not getting a turn two Atali. At least I have this Roaming Throne. So I have Red Blast and Veil of Summer in my hand left up.
That's good.
And it seems pretty good, right? So Urza, first of all, everyone else has mulliganed pretty low. Urza casts Consecrated Sphinx, and I'm like, this is the perfect thing to Red Blast.
Yeah.
So I Red Blast that. Otherwise, I just lose this game, I think. And Urza just goes, all right, well, I'm out of this game. So that tells me that, all right, I don't have to worry about you anymore. The Ezio player is now the one that I'm super worried about because Quark has just been turn one, land, turn two, Quark. No, it was turn two, Tavern Scoundrel, turn three, Quark. Like, not even too much going on. So I was really only worried about Ezio, who just kept playing Mana Source after Mana Source after Mana Source. And I'm going, it's coming, something's coming. And they pass on their turn three without playing Ballister Spy or the other one. So I'm like, oh man, I actually kind of have a window. So I cast Atali and we got there. Dude, Roaming Throne ended up being super good. Did I say anything else? I just said, spent 20 minutes copying Atali for the win. this was probably the most amount of Magic that I played all day was this game.
I think the addition of Panharmonicon and Roaming Throne have made Atali be able to just go way over the top.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like it's allowed you to like do some things that are just like so insane that no one can ever come back from, which I think is kind of what the deck needed, is like the extra push, right?
It really did, because like what would happen a lot is like you spin off your Atali and you go, oh, that didn't get me anywhere. I'm going to pass and lose to another turbo deck, or I'm going to pass and lose because someone else got to untap with the Rhystic Study after I fed them 8 cards.
Right.
Now what you can do is you can have your first chunky be all mana and you're like, thank God, because my second Atali is going to flip into the tutor that I need in order to continue to get set up. The difference between getting 8 cards versus getting 4 cards is astronomical. It's like getting a free Wheel of Fortune plus without missing because some of the cards that you find are lands.
Right, yeah. Some of them are misses, but yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, they're basically lands. They're like interactions.
So you're 2-1 right now.
I'm 2-1 right now.
Theoretically, we have figured out that 12 points is a lock in these tournaments. If you get 12 points, you're a lock for top 16. If you get 11 points, you're a maybe for top 16.
So I need 2 draws to make sure that I can get there.
Yeah. Because right now you are at 2-1, so you have 10 points. So if you get 2 draws, you are locked. If you get a loss and a draw, you are maybe. If you get a win and a loss, you are also locked.
But already I'm doing way better than I thought that I would with Atali. In an actual CEDH tournament, this is wild.
My next game goes kind of the opposite of your game went with Ezio. I got the other side of Ezio. For my one, I was playing against Oswald, Kinnan. This was Brandon on Kinnan. Me going third, and then Ezio. I kept Tarnished Citadel, Derevi, K9, Cyclonic Rift, the Simic Bounce spell again, the
Colossal Sky Turtle.
Colossal Sky Turtle, and that was it. So I think I should have went to 5. I wrote down that I think this hand was kind of bad. There wasn't enough. There was a high interaction hand, and I should have just kept more mana, I think. Brandon lands, it was a slow game. Brandon lands a turn 3 Sphinx, and I ended up bouncing it on my turn right before Ezio goes, and Ezio just untaps and wins. I wanted to wait a little while because I thought there was a chance that Ezio wins. I kind of let myself get talked into it from the Oswald player that they were kind of stressing that, like, we have to get rid of the consecrated sphinx. And I know how devastating consecrated sphinx can be in canon if you let it around for even a second. So I was like, okay, yeah, I'm just going to use my mana now to just deny you two more draws. And even Brandon let me know that he did not have enough removal for the Ezio player, that, like, if Ezio can win, he's going to win. And I just kind of, like, rolled the dice and say, Ezio, I think, had multi five, so I was just hopeful that he wouldn't. I had talked to the Oswald player and said, if you don't go for a win on your turn, or, like, don't get to a winning state on your turn, I will bounce this consecrated sphinx right now because I don't want to do it, and then there's nothing to do for you. So I had already made that deal with Oswald. I should have then still allowed Brandon to untap on Ezio's turn, and then in Ezio's end step, bounce the consecrated sphinx then to deny those two draws.
Oh, okay.
I think that would have been better to just give Brandon two more shots as ways to stop the Ezio, and the Ezio player basically just untaps and slams the balustered spy, mills their whole library. There's a Cabal therapy put on the stack, and we realized that there might have been a moment that we should have used Brandon, and had I left my bounce spell up, also my bounce spell to bounce one of the creatures that would have made it a little bit more difficult for him to flashback the Dread Return, but we kind of just missed that opportunity. The trigger happened, Brandon revealed his hand, and by the time he revealed his hand, the creatures were there. There wasn't really another opportunity for him to do something, so we kind of missed a window. I kind of, like, let myself get politicked out of a situation that I could have been able to maybe do something good with, but this is another one where, like, I kept what I thought was a bad hand, and I think I realized pretty quickly that the hand probably wasn't going to develop. It was Derevian Guy's Cradle, so I was like, these are cards that I want. I should have them, and I wasn't ready to have them. I needed to develop an early game first, so I ended up losing that game, and now I'm 1-2-1.
1-2-1. Okay, so you need a win.
So now I need a win to win my fifth round. That was my fourth round. I need to win my next round, and if I win my next round, then I may be in top 16, only maybe.
So long as your tiebreakers
are good. So as long as my tiebreakers are good.
So this is round four, then?
We're going into round... Oh, I guess so. We're going... That was my round four.
So my round four was... I'm going last again. Oh my god. This is my third time now. Thrasios Timna, Thrasios Yoshimaru, Timna, Halana, and then me. So I offer a draw, and the Thrasios Yoshimaru player does not have a record that can accept a draw.
Okay.
So we have to play this round. So I still got a turn three Itali, but it was the slowest hand of the day. It says here that I mulled to two, but I did not mull to two.
Oh, okay.
There's no way that I did that. I flipped into a Sol Ring and a Growing Rites of Itlamok, which I could flip right away on turn three. And I found a Professional Facebreaker from my deck, so I had to pass, which basically told Thrasios Timna that nobody has interaction because Chunky could do his thing and no one, it was just, it's very clear.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you play Itali and you can't win, that it's a window now.
Yeah.
It's a window.
Sometimes I think it's important as players who are watching the turbo player go through things, it's important to, like, calmly pass on stuff and not shout to the table, all right, everybody, what do we have? You don't need to start pulling together and figure out what everyone has right away as soon as the turbo deck starts doing stuff, because then this tells everyone else what y'all have. So yes, there are moments where it can be good to reveal information. There are moments to shut the fuck up and don't say what you have and just calmly pass and say, I don't think this is a win yet, so I'm not going to do anything yet. And just, like, make it seem like you could have something. Don't lie. You don't have to lie or whatever, but, like, you can phrase what you're saying in a way that other players may still think that you have something.
So I didn't get another turn. Thrasios Tim, the player, ended up taking it from there. So now I am 2-2, and I need... Like, I feel like I need a win in order to top 16, at least to guarantee a top 16. But we'll have to see what the rest of the standings look like to determine what I'm going to do for round five.
And in my round five, I know that I have to win. It's my only option. There's no draw option, so I have to try to go for a win. I was me, first seed, which is great. Okay, the one that I need to win, I'm first seed. At least that's good. Against Tyam, Glarb, and Derevi, I keep Delighted Halfling, Pippin, Land, and Diada. So this is a mulligan to five, but it's mana, and it's a little bit of protection, and a cheap legend, and a win condition in Diada if I make enough mana. So, like, out of five, I think it's as close to pretty decent. Like, that's what I want. You know what I mean? There's not much else that I would want. Unfortunately, in this game, I tapped wrong. I drew Marvin. Marvin is the name of it.
Yes,
toy.
Marvin. Got it.
I left my Marvin available, but the only way that Marvin could activate for mana was with Delighted Halfling's colorless ability. I could have tapped the Marvin with the Delighted Halfling's ability and left open a green so that I could keep Silvala available to activate and activate Sisse. I could just, like, could have had a Sisse activation and, like, did my stuff. And then, like, as soon as I did it, I, like, looked around the board, waited a second, and I was like, it's too late for me to back up, right? Like, I've done this. And, like, I didn't even bother, like, calling a judge or asking. I was just like, I did it. Like, I tapped it wrong. And just, like, in my head, I was like, leave a mana up. Marvin is, like a good source of mana. I should leave that up in case I want to double activate, to say, Savala or something like that. And I just, like, I didn't realize that this doesn't tap for a green. But it ended up, weirdly, kind of working out for me, because after a culling ritual resolved later and a good chunk of my board, including the Marvin, was wiped out, I was pretty much deemed by the table not a threat. Tyan was like going off, doing a bunch of stuff, getting really close. All I had was Sisse and Sylvala and nothing else. My Pippin was destroyed. My mana was destroyed. That was kind of all I had. Then I wrote down, culling ritual messed me up and everyone forgot about me. Toxreal comes down and puts slime counters on shit.
Oh God.
Which at first I'm like wondering, like, is this bad with Tyan? Like, we're giving slime counters to Tyan. Is maybe that bad? My things have -2/-2 on them by the time I untap. But because I have Sylvala and Sisse, they both have at least 3 toughness. I won with the Sylvala Tyvar line again. I had Sylvala, I searched for Tyvar, I untapped Sylvala, and I was able to just go through a win with the slime counters on and like just like the last window I had before everything was gone.
That's crazy. Even the -2/-2 with the slime counters,
it still didn't matter. I was still able to get my Sisse up to +5/+5, but not really +5/+5 because of the slime counters. It was +3/+3. I did realize afterwards that there would have been a line. I had Teferi in my hand. I could have played the Teferi and bounced the Toxreal, removing the slime counters and made the line a little bit easier for myself.
The slime counters are still there, but they lose their effect because Toxreal's not in play. Yeah.
I lose the effect of the slime counter. So my stuff would have been big again and I could have found Chromatic Ori. I didn't do this. I didn't stick the Teferi first, but that also, I don't know. I just didn't do that one. I did the other line instead. It would have been safer to do that one, but either way, I still got through with the win. The Toxreal was kind of like Glarb's last remaining effort, and then it was funny that he revealed to me later that he could have kept up Overgrown Tomb to Vampiric Tutor for removal and instead kept up a different land or something, so he couldn't Vampiric Tutor, and I'm thinking now, like, that's so funny that I fucked up leaving my man up wrong way.
Right?
And then so did you, like, in the same game.
Oh,
but
that's so funny.
Magic is impossibly difficult, and I got pretty lucky that my mistakes didn't end up mattering, and I was able to still win the game, so now I'm at 11 points. 2 wins, 2 losses, 1 draw. I'm at 11 points. I'm maybe for top 16.
Nice. So we go into my round then, and I'm in third seat in a pod that has Grixis Pirates, another Atali player at 2-2, and then me, and then a Glarb player, who's the only one who is at 2-1-1 right now. So, like, if they lose, they still have a pretty good shot. If they draw, they are guaranteed in no matter what. It took a lot of convincing from the other two players to get me to agree to an intentional draw. And eventually what it came down to was that normally I like being the second Atali player in a double Atali pod. The first Atali doesn't go so well, my Atali goes better. I don't know why. That's just historically
because
how those pods go.
If they do whiff, you're left with all your twin flames are now Atalis right away, because that means their Atali is still in play, right?
Well, not all my twin flames.
That's
so
true.
Only
not
Heat
all.
Shimmer
yeah.
and Cursed Mirror can copy creatures on other people's boards.
But
that's still a good thing to have.
That still could be good.
Still a really cool thing to have, right? But what I also realized is just like this Grixis Pirates deck is going first, and 2 of the players in the pod are Atali, and we're not going to do anything against Grixis Pirates. So if Glarb doesn't have a way to stop Grixis Pirates, we just lose the Grixis Pirates, and I am just completely out of it for top 16. So I decide that my odds at getting into top 16 off tiebreakers at a 2-2-1 record are better than the chances of me winning this game.
Ended up being the case. Half of the 11 pointers got top 16 and about half didn't.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of where I was going, whereas like I probably have realistically less than a 25% chance of winning this game, because not only am I going third, but I'm also in a pod set up that I think is really unfavorable for me.
Yeah. Play to win the tournament, not play to win each individual game.
Exactly.
Right? That's kind of important.
Exactly.
That, like, as long as the rules are the way that they are, we're going to try to do whatever we can to win the tournament.
And I also fucked myself up because we played a casual game that I won, and then you get in your head, you're like, oh, why did I do that? And then you realize, because everyone else at the table is so friendly, that they're talking to you like, oh no, I had a pyroblast for something that you did earlier that you flipped into, but like I was chatting with someone else. I if it was in a tournament, I would have countered that.
Right,
and you go,
yeah.
And the Glarb player wouldn't have kept their hand in that casual game. So like it just goes to show you that CEDH and TEDH kind of are a little bit different.
Big time, yeah.
Just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, dude, definitely. I definitely got that refresher, that memory of like doing this tournament. And like, this is a pretty, I don't want to say low stakes tournament, but we're just playing for like store credit at our local game store.
And
you know
no
what I mean?
One has like a heavy rules lawyer. Well, 99% of people don't have like a heavy rules lawyering vibe. It's just like they're play to win fans that have the play to win vibe.
Yeah, I thought it was an awesome event. It was super fun, dude. Like the political aspect, I thought everyone was talking all day. Like I thought it was like in a really good way too. It was super good.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny that we're at 2-2-1 coming up at the end of the day here, just for it to turn out that we didn't make top 16.
No.
In fact,
Cam got 17th place and I got 18th place.
Typical.
We both have 11 points. We both have 2 wins, 2 losses, and a draw. And then there are a total of 6 players with that record that made it in the top 16 and 7 who did not. And we were part of the 7 who did not.
And the rest of my pod that was at 2-2-1 got into the top 16. Yeah. And they're coming up to me, giving me hugs like, I'm so sorry, man.
We really thought the math was good.
I mean, they weren't wrong. Like, I was just one off. It just came down to the right people who had 7 points coming into round 5, either won or lost or whatever it was that ended up meaning that their tiebreakers were better than mine. Like, the people that I lost to, the Timna Thrasios player that I lost to had 3 wins, but the Rog Thras player that I lost to, I think only had 1 win.
Okay.
And they ended up losing their next game, so my tiebreakers were not as good as some other players, it turned out.
Yeah, and there's not really much you can do about that, but you had a good time with Itali, right?
It went way better than I thought. They were such insane games to play. And I really love where Itali's at right now. I think it was actually a really good meta call too.
Yeah.
Because like there were a lot of people that are still gearing up for long games. And when you can sneak in your really powerful card advantage commander super early, that just like wins the game on its own right there. You know, there were a couple times where I had to pass and then win on my next turn, but like you can put yourself into these scenarios where like, all right, I bounced Krark back to your hand, so now like you're not gonna have any chance on your next turn. Like I felt really safe being able to do plays like that.
Yeah, a lot of times your whiffs look like you destroy the board and then you pass a turn with a bunch of extra mana. And when your whiffs are that, then you're in a pretty good spot. When your whiffs are like Swords to Plowshare and you get a crop rotation and these other, you know, like
yeah.
You didn't win the game, but you get ahead on mana and you fuck everyone else up. That's where Itali wants to be.
I had a good mix of luck with not bad whiffs and some good whiffs here and there, right? So it was just kind of a smattering of what I needed to have a top 16 record of 2-2-1.
There you go. Yeah. I definitely loved playing with Sisay the whole day. I'm definitely going to stay on Sisay, especially in a tournament situation. I think Sisay is just like kind of lined up perfectly for that winning second style of like tournament CDH play. Like when I'm going for the win, I can be able to tell pretty easily what type of interaction people have because I'm normally going for the win after somebody else already did. So like things are getting revealed and there's enough tools the deck has access to that once it's given the window, it can take it. So I'm definitely going to keep on working on Sisay. The deck is super tricky, but the more I learn the deck, just the more fun it is. So I'm definitely sticking with it.
And I love how innocuous it is too. Like there's a lot of times where players don't think that you'll be able to win off of your current board state, but like there's so much to learn from that deck that, you know, you really have to be cautious about Sisay at any point of the game.
Yeah, that's very true. It's hard to, like, I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, but like a lot of the times, like what you want to kill oftentimes isn't worth it. Like what are you going to kill the Pippin when there's a Rhystic Study? Like it's hard to kill them early. It's hard to get rid of the Kutzel when there's also a Grand Abolisher on Blue Farm side of things. You know what I mean? Like which one are you going to do? But I think Sisay can kind of take advantage of that.
Dude, I got to look this up because like right before we started recording, there was a Reddit thread that got posted. Clam Chowder sleeps with the fishes. Just so everyone is aware, Clam Chowder style Sisay is fully dead. The deck was constructed around Dockside, and there's pretty much no reviving it at this point. Plus, no one plays it anymore, not even the guys who invented it. So if you see a Sisay sitting down at your table, one, they are playing the Sovala Derevi Oath Tutor Chains variant, because that's the only version sane people play anymore. And two, regardless of which version they are playing, and again, there's only one real version now, you can basically disregard them as Sisay is simply too weak without Dockside. And the top comment is post sponsored by the Sisay Discord. Don't mind us. We're totally not threatening.
Yes, dude, there's a lot of like, Sissy's got the perfect thing of like, I can't win from right here. I can't win right here. I cannot win right now. What anything I can get, I cannot win right now. That's always the case because by the time that I can win three times over top of everything else. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's super funny.
That was so funny. I was like, he's going to get a kick out of this.
Yeah, we cannot win right now, I swear.
So you have the top 16 written down.
I do, yes.
What are all of the decks in the top 16?
Should we also mention that although we didn't make top 16, should we allow the audience to guess who did?
Tyler, yeah. And although he could make the top 16, he could not make the podcast today.
Tyler has a job and we have things to do. So our top 16, in no particular order, but the top four I will list last, was Atali, not you, Malcolm Vile Smasher, Timna Krom, Ezio, Zimone, Timna Halana, Thrasios Timna, Tivit, Glarb, Iron Man, which is cool, Master of Keys, which we rated pretty badly in the Esper Commander list, and we are proven wrong that it's in the top 16 here, Thrasios Timna, and your top four, drumroll please.
That sounded like a cat, but okay. That's still very cat-like.
I tried to go more cat-ish.
Yeah, good.
Rogthras, Rogsai, Kinnan, Timna Krom. With Tyler being the Kinnan pilot.
That is such a CEDH pod right there.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a pretty diverse top 16. Zimone and Iron Man are both cool. That's awesome.
The Zimone is the new Zimone from Duskmourne that creates manifested things, and you can flip over face-down cards. I never thought that I would see a CEDH deck that said over a face-down card.
Yeah.
But you know how, like, there were a couple decks that were trying out the Oculus?
Yeah. Rogthras was on that for a little bit.
Right,
because
like, if your Seedborn Muse gets in under the Oculus, you can flip it up. And it's uncounterable now.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And no one knows that that's
what
it is.
It's like a special action, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That is literally what it is. Yeah. It's a special action. So I unfortunately did not get to see a lot of what this deck can do, but maybe this will be something we talk a little bit more in like a future podcast or something like that
if people
are interested, because that sounds cool.
The Rogthras player is the pilot that I lost to in the Swiss. He was a great pilot. He knows what he's doing with the deck. The deck is super powerful, and I think he had a really good shot of winning the finals. Also, information, they had split the pot at this point. They were splitting the prize pool. They were just playing for basically their face on our playmat for next year when we do the next year's playmats for Play to Win CDH tournaments. The winner of this tournament will be on that. They had already split their prizes at this point.
Yeah, it was a really interesting game, I thought, because Tyler notoriously has said that like Kinnan is really afraid of like Rog'Sai because it's the fast deck that, you know, he can't really stop in a lot of meaningful ways, and Tyler needs time to get his board set up if he's going to progress anywhere. So Tyler's going last and Rog'Sai is going first, so Ryan throws out a Ragavan on turn one and Tyler mental missteps it, which like can look really weird, but like knowing what Tyler knows about his list, this is like kind of the only thing that he can do against Ryan, because if there's no Vamp Tutor that's guaranteed to come later, like who knows that you're going to have better meaningful action against the deck that you're afraid of the most in the pot.
Yeah, you kind of almost have to interact when it's relevant, because that other moment, like you said, that other moment might not come, and then you might die with cards in your hand.
Which then kind of put Ryan in a weird spot, because I know he was heavily relying on that Ragavan to be able to get him treasures. So he ends up being in a spot where then he's like, I don't really think anyone can win. I'm going to throw down Defense Grid because I also can't be, you know, going into my turn and, you know, surviving through interaction through a Timna Krom and a Rogthras player potentially too. He made a bit of a gamble with this Defense Grid and had to pass the turn after that. And Kyle took full advantage of it and had a bit of a unique line that he had to take, I think.
He like ad nauseumed, and then with Underworld Breach that he already had, ad nauseumed again because the ad nause got countered. I think it was something like that.
Even through the Defense Grid, which was crazy.
Yeah, well, no, on his turn he did this with the Defense Grid helping him.
But if his ad nause got, when did he ad nause?
Oh, yeah, on his turn. Yeah, someone was able to have a counterspell. I see what you're saying. Yeah,
so
they did have
was
one counterspell.
Yeah.
Yeah, even through the Defense Grid. Yes, I think. Anyway, that's what I saw. I was drinking a Diet Pepsi and then trying to watch.
I was opening some collector boosters because, like, me and Chen, and we were just like, well, we feel sad about getting 19th and 17th place.
Yeah.
And that was the other thing. Chen also got very close, but just got kicked out because of his record. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to win more. Just got to win more games.
We just got to win
three
more.
Wins is a lock. We got to get three wins.
Three wins is a lock.
That's what we know we can get.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you think we can get three wins?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Anything else you want to say about the tournament?
I don't think so. Just that I had a great time. Yeah. I played probably about an hour's worth of Magic, and I did zero politicking, and I had a blast. I will highly consider playing Chunky at future tournaments, considering that it did very well.
Cool. Yeah, me too. I'm with you. Same with Sissy, except not for the same reasons, but yeah, I agree. I'm definitely going to keep on playing this deck.
Nice.
Cool. Thanks for watching. If you'd like to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
Mr. Jerby, The Cardbook Cookbook, Penguinman 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fire, Spangler, Demetrius Clark, Larson E. Roy, Zorboy Blue, Sparky B, Insomnia, Hesse Phillip, Bowling Group B, Gecko 21, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Shonen the Ice, Gare Bear Garrett, Luke Cook, Connor Sipon, Joshua Day, Peter Stewart, Carnal Wild, Uncle Butts, Kawaja A. Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus.
Thanks, Cam, for the future. Next, we can talk about the website where you can buy our merchandise, playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on social media for more content.
Thanks so much for watching.
See you next time.
John Koba, the Gaming Kinkajou, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Roy, Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson, Jabaha, Mace the Ace, Dalton Poti, Justin Man Solo, Ace S, Jan Wild, Fang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
All right. We ready? We're going for 4 minutes so far.
And my hair is still okay?
It is what it is.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply.